Good afternoon.
Bears fans, this is Take the North.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Welcome into the Take the North podcast presented by Odyssey. I am Dan Weeder of the Chicago Tribune, joined today by Carolina Panthers beat writer Joe Person from The Athletic, my combine drinking buddy and a friend of the podcast. Joe, how you doing?
I see I am a guest on episode 235. I feel like that should be good for a drink token in Indianapolis in February.
Yeah, I've got you already on the schedule for Harry and Izzy's at some point during combine week next spring, I guess winter, spring, whenever that is. And we'll do what we normally do, which is get to the bottom of a lot of stuff in the NFL, right? That's what all we do in Indianapolis is just get to the bottom of a lot of stuff in the NFL.
Get to the bottom of some pint glasses occasionally.
Well, this week we've got to get to the bottom of Bears Panthers, which obviously has a ton of storylines attached to it for a week five game between two teams that are trying to make their way in this league. You know what this game means in Chicago. It's a revisitation of the 2023 trade that essentially brought the Bears the ultimate gift basket of pieces and picks and players to try to build a championship contender with. The Panthers used that gift basket of picks to go all in on Bryce Young, who's no longer their starting quarterback. So as we start out here, I'd like you to try to give our audience a little bit of an understanding from the Carolina vantage point of, one, how they view this trade, and two, where they stand when they see what the imbalance is between what they gave up and what they got back.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, other than the owner and the assistant general manager, Dan Morgan was the assistant, now the GM. You know, they're not going to be taking stock in this trade. I mean, this is not anything they want to talk about. We don't have access to Dan Morgan this week. We will talk to Dave Canales, but Dave Canales obviously wasn't around. Scott Fitter is now with the Washington Commanders. Frank Reich is retired and counting David Tepper's money. And so, yeah, I mean, it was clearly just an awful trade. I mean, the Bryce Young lasted 18 games, 2-14 last year. He missed one. And then obviously the first two games this year before they pull the plug. And so there's no way to sugarcoat it. There's no way to, well, maybe if we revisit this in a couple years, unless it is just some remarkable comeback by Bryce Young for the Panthers.
Right.
This was a failure of epic proportions.
It's incredible to look at. I'll just read you the list of the things that the Bears have gotten back now that some of those picks have turned into players. Obviously, DJ Moore was the first player attached to the deal. I know folks in Carolina in that building were like, what are we doing going all in on a quarterback and trading our premier pass catcher right before he gets started? The Bears then traded back to 9. They traded back from 9 to 10 and got down all right. And a 2024 fourth round pick that turned into their punter, who's becoming a cult hero here in Chicago, Torrey Taylor. They went on in the third round and took Tyreek Stevenson. And they, by the way, they still have a 2025 second round pick coming from this trade. So if you're looking to take stock on this trade as you go into your own Panthers week this week, that's it. I mean, that's a list of, we've got four starters that I named there, a punter, and then what would presumably be a starter in a 2025 second round pick that's still coming. Incredible to wrap your brain around that.
It is. That's a virtual smorgasbord. Listen, the Panthers were not the only team that thought Bryce Young was going to be worthy of that first round number one overall pick. As you know and have reported, the Raiders tried to move up for it. But, and in fact, I think that's ultimately what got the Panthers to sweeten the deal. And for that laundry list that you just rattled off. And it's been a failure on multiple levels. They failed Bryce Young last year by getting him PTSD behind a kind of a makeshift offensive line due to injuries, but they did not have depth at all, and they did not have NFL caliber depth. And so when these guard injuries hit a guard, Bryce got sacked 62 times, more than any other rookie besides David Carr, which was, I think, 65. They didn't have enough weapons. And so they improved those things this offseason. They right now, their offensive line has like one of the best pass protection rates in the league. I think they're second behind Baltimore. They've got Deontay Johnson, who looks like he's, you know, playing very well in a prove it year, last year of his contract. But the scars on Bryce Young were still visible those first 2 weeks, and he was not going through his reads. He was abandoning clean pockets. It's like he did not trust himself. He did not trust this offense. And Dave Canales and Dave Tepper wasted no time in going to Andy Dalton.
Was that the right move? And if so, I guess I'll leave it there. And then what did week three signify, where Andy Dalton comes in and really lights it up in a victory?
Well, honestly, they should have made this move last year. And I think Frank Reich, you know, that was such a mess. He gets fired week 11, you know, not long after the Thursday night game in Chicago. But there were signs very early on last year that Bryce could have stood some seasoning, some sitting and watching, and just, you know, that he just was not, despite being the number one overall pick from Alabama, he just did not look ready, and certainly not in the way C.J. Stroud did. And so they didn't do it last year. I think Frank Reich and others were, you know, I think David Tepper, you know, he was driving a lot of the ship to draft Bryce Young, but it was not just Tepper. And so at any rate, they stick with him. This year, Canales is in here, has no ties to Bryce Young, was not here for that decision. And they couldn't even run the offense like Bryce couldn't. And I remember Dalton's first game. I mean, it was just last week in Vegas.
I'm glad you still remember that.
All the way back to September 23rd. But no, after the game, Dalton had just, you know, lit it up in Vegas. And I'm asking Canales, like, what was your favorite throw? What was the highlight that you – and he said, you know what? He got us in the right place, and he was throwing the ball on time. That's what I liked. And that Bryce Young was not doing.
Veteran savvy that then shows you what an offense can work like when it's run properly. I'm curious this, just rewinding again one more time. What did your reporting tell you about why Bryce Young was the had-to-have-it guy over C.J. Stroud? Because obviously C.J. Stroud is now seen by so many as the model of the guy that you're trying to get that comes in, has immediate success, takes his team to the playoffs. And obviously the Panthers did their homework on both guys and leaned ultimately in one direction, probably despite a little bit of internal tug-of-war that went on there.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that. And there were some people in the building that thought that there was too much emphasis placed on the processing scores. The S2 was the kind of test of the month, flavor of the month. And Bryce Young was off the charts, and CJ didn't test real well in that. And I was in Kansas City last year for the draft, or at least the day before the draft, when we get to talk to these guys. And CJ Stroud was really asked for the first time about it. And he's like, I'm not a good test taker. So what? I know football. And I don't know. I just, that was a big thing. They loved Bryce, the way he carried himself and presented himself. But, I mean, too much emphasis on those test scores, in my opinion. Easy to say it now, right? Like, at the time, we were writing stories about this S2 test has been very indicative, and look at the success rate of these quarterbacks, particularly, who have done well on the S2, but it did not hold true, or has not, to this point with Bryce Young.
Is Bryce Young done in Carolina? Is there any possibility that he reemerges at some point and is their quarterback again?
I think it would only be due to injury.
Which happens.
Especially when you're a 36-year-old quarterback.
Yeah.
So I have been sort of staying away from absolutes, which some of our colleagues in this industry don't always avoid, but which is fine. Like, because I think, all things being equal, if Andy Dalton stays healthy, yeah, I think we've probably seen the last of Bryce Young. I don't know if they would move him at this trade deadline. I don't know that there's going to be a lot of interest in him. And, I mean, you just rattled off what they gave up and what it turned into for the Bears.
Yeah.
How do you – what would the optics be if the Panthers flip Bryce Young on November 1st for a fifth round pick. but you talk to people around the league and there's that's like Trey Lance, the Cowboys sent a fourth rounder to San Francisco for Trey Lance. So that's a similar comp. Justin Fields didn't even, the Bears didn't even get that, right?
Well, they may get a four. So essentially it was a conditional six that if he plays 51% of the snaps, then it will move up to a four. So right now, because he started the year and taking advantage of his opportunities, it looks like it's trending in the direction of a four.
Yeah. So I don't know. They say they're working with them, and they, Dave Canales last week said this is a developmental staff. So then the question is, well, how do you work with him when he's QB2? And their offense coordinator, Brad Idzik, said you kind of steal reps. You know, the offensive coaches are there, with the scout team, which I've kind of forgotten. And because in college, defense is on one field, offense is on the other. But as I'm sure you know, but I had forgotten, like offense scout team runs against the defense and all the coaches are on the same field and they do play. So anyway, so Dave Canales has continued to be in Bryce Young's ear on that scout team. And yeah, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he has to play due to injury, but I don't think it's going to be for another reason.
Andy Dalton was the starter here in 2021. Then he got injured in week two and Justin Fields' career as a starter started. But as that year went on, there were some injuries and Andy had to come back in the mix. And so there's always this carousel in the league where you never know where the next revolving door is going to sweep your quarterback out for a couple of weeks and sweep the other guy back in. It'll be interesting to see. You detailed a lot of the reasons why it didn't work for Bryce there last year and to start this year. If you were kind of retroactively making a how not to manual on how to manage a number one overall pick, what would be your like top three bullet points as the Bears kind of try to oversee Caleb Williams' development here?
Well, again, some of this is hindsight 2020. So let me issue that. Right. caveat issued. I think I might have done the Packers model and sat him behind Dalton last year. I mean, they signed Dalton to a pretty cheap deal last year, but that was never even an option. And I don't even know that it was. I think if Frank Reich had pushed, that they could have, and I think Tepper would have been okay with sitting him at some point. But that didn't happen. So that and obviously the Bears aren't doing that with Caleb. Other than that, they're the weapons. The Bears have so many more weapons than the Panthers did last year. I mean, Adam Thielen, had a 1,000-yard season and good for him, but it was all, 6 yards within the line of scrimmage. It was, it was not pushing the ball downfield. It was a very static offense. And then I mentioned the protection. And it's 62 sacks. I mean, that's a lot. And frankly, it's somewhat of a miracle that Bryce did not get bent in half and broken, physically broken. I think he did take some emotional scars, but those would be the three things I would say.
It's really fascinating, because it's like, you live it. And that number one overall picks usually ride a wave of hope and hype for a long time. And then a lot of them never reach the bar that's set for them. And then they go, but the Bryce Young situation accelerated so fast, almost unprecedented fashion with how quick it got from A to Z in the state they're currently in. It's almost dizzying.
Yeah. So, right. So the Jamarcus Russell, obviously he's sort of held up, as the biggest quarterback bust, but Russell didn't really play his rookie year. So that spaced that out into the second and third year with the Raiders. And so, I don't even know what the comp would be. But I think the Panthers are setting a new precedent, sadly for them.
So we go into this week and the Bears, I think, see an opportunity here to they got right a little bit on Sunday against the Rams. And they see an opportunity to kind of build momentum. The Panthers, just looking at the numbers defensively, they don't seem like they get a lot of heat on the quarterback. Don't seem like they're real good inside the red zone. And then I don't see much on paper or in the stat sheet that says, oh, boy, this is an imposing unit. What can you tell us about the Panthers defense right now?
Well, the defense is reeling. And already, as you said, they did not have much in the way of a pass rush. They signed Jadeveon Clowney to a 2-year deal. I don't know. But they have nothing opposite him. The other free agent signing, DJ Wonnum, has yet to play. He's had some health stuff, injury stuff. But then on top of all that, they lose Derrick Brown week one or week two to a season-ending knee injury. I mean, this guy, their only Pro Bowler last year. Yeah. And then just yesterday, the news that Shaq Thompson, their veteran inside linebacker, out for the year with Achilles. And those are the two, two defensive captains, emotional leaders, all that, and good football players on top of that. And so, yeah, last year the defense was sort of the one thing you would hang your hat on if you're the Panthers in the midst of a 2-15 season. Right. I mean, they had Brian Burns and Frankie Louvu at the time. And now, of course, Burns, they traded to the Giants, and Louvu signed as free agent with the Commanders. And they didn't really do much. Well, they did replace Burns with Clowney, but it's a mess. I mean, I think the offense, and you didn't ask me this. I mean, I think Dalton could keep them in this game, but the defense, you know, they're going to give up some splash plays and some big plays, I would think, to Caleb.
Sounds like a prescription that Bears fans are eager to see, because explosives haven't been the norm here through the first month of the season for the Bears offense. They've really struggled to get it going. Finally got it going on the ground a little bit on Sunday against the Rams, against another depleted and inferior defense, and they want to get that going. You mentioned the Panthers offense. The Bears defense has been playing really, really well. 10 straight games holding an opponent to 21 or fewer. What ways can Andy and maybe Deontay Johnson and Chubb Hubbard challenge the Bears defense this week?
Yeah, Canales, he was like this last year with the Bucs, and Tampa Bay, I think, had either the 31st or 32nd ranked running game. But he is very stubborn about trying to establish the run, and, you know, and for obvious reasons, how it sets up the pass and you know, it doesn't make you one dimensional. And Chuba Hubbard, as you said, excuse me, Dan, two straight back-to-back 100 yard rushing games. Hadn't been done since Deontay Foreman a couple years ago, another guy Bears fans know. But yeah, their offense is looking like a big boy NFL. I'm not saying they're not the Chiefs and they're not lighting it up like that, but they are, as I said earlier, they're at least functioning. And it's, you know, even in losing Sunday to the Bengals, it was competitive. Like they got down 31-14, and you're like, oh, I've seen this story before.
Sure.
It's going to end up like 38-17. But then, you know, it ended up a 10-point game, and it was that they had a chance. You know, it was a tack on field goal for the Bengals late. So I'd be surprised if it's a blowout. Now, the latter part of the season, after they go to Munich, which is like, I don't know, November 10th, something.
Okay.
Anyway, back half of this season is really salty, including and beginning with the Chiefs in Charlotte. And so if they're going to, quote unquote, steal some of these games coming up, you know, this week, I'm sure they view as a possibility in Chicago.
We've got our European field trip next week, heading to London for Bears, Jaguars, and Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Great place to be.
Nice.
You're going to go over to Germany, and you're going to get one of those giant pretzels and a beer stein bigger than your head, and it'll be all good, right?
I'm looking forward to it. In fact, I need to book that trip before our powers that be say, why are we spending money on this Panthers team? Remind me.
Get that in. Two last things for you real quick. Anything – as you look at this matchup this week that you're particularly intrigued by or curious about as you look at it from a Carolina lens?
I'll be honest. I have not dug that deep yet. I've, you know, been working on other stuff. And yesterday I did a lot of Shaq Thompson stuff.
I was just curious if your DJ Moore intrigue was still percolating or if that's kind of a boat has sailed story.
No, that's always interesting. The corner play has been pretty decent. Obviously we all, you know, I think, everyone who covers the league thought J.C. Horn, a healthy J.C. Horn, is a good, you know, top 10, 12 corner in this league. And he's been showing that for the most part. And then they got a reclamation project out of Seattle, Mike Jackson. He told us he did not want to be known as Michael Jackson anymore. but sorry, that was bad.
No, I like it. Let's keep it rolling.
Mike Jackson's been okay. And they have not been – they have not been like, you know, shadowing the number one receiver. So I don't think it's going to be a case where Horn covers DJ the whole game. So it'll be interesting. So that's probably the matchup I'd want to see is how does Mike Jackson defend DJ Moore?
Very interesting. And the very last thing, last year, the Panthers came in town for a Thursday night game. We were able to go downtown, get a nice lunch as a pregame lunch. I'm just curious what you got on tap for your visit to Chicago this year. Are you coming in late? What's the story with your Chicago visit?
Well, I am staying downtown in a
Marriott. Don't give away your property or your room number because people will come find you.
I have a college friend who lives, is there an area called Oak Park?
Yes, there is.
I think they're in Oak Park, and so I may see him. I hope to watch the Phillies playoff game, and okay. I'm going to have you suggest some good dive bars where I may be able to take in a couple innings of some MLB playoffs.
Excellent. And then we got a noon kickoff on Lake Michigan on Sunday, and should be fascinating. I think it's again, it looks like an opportunity that if the Bears squander, I'm going to be sitting here next week in crisis mode here in Chicago.
Well, it seems like Chicago is always 1 week away from crisis mode.
Well, you had experience with John Fox. He gave us the gem. It's either crisis or carnival. Every week it's either a crisis or carnival. So I pull that one out a lot. And this week we've got a mini carnival. We've got the funnel cake stand up, a couple rides out, and then just trying to hope that it doesn't turn into a crisis by next week.
Very good, man. Well, I look forward to seeing you, buddy.
That's Joe Person. I'm Dan Reeder with the Chicago Tribune. Remember to like, subscribe, tell your friends about the Take the North podcast. For Joe Person, I'm Dan Reeder. Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. The Bears.